Hello and welcome to SG Squared, Steve Gladden on Small Groups. I'm James Browning, and this is a very special episode of Steve Gladden on Small Groups. This episode, we are featuring a panel conversation featuring Steve Gladden, Dave Inns from North Coast, and Rick Howerton from Lake Point Church in Texas. It's moderated by Carolyn Taketa, longtime member of the Small Group Network, former Small Group point person, and a former attorney. So this conversation comes from the lobby conference that just took place in February. Each year in February, we meet in Southern California for a small group point person networking event. Each of the three members of the panel and Carolyn as the moderator have decades of small group experience. So this panel is a unique look at what they wish they knew going into small group ministry and what they thought they knew, but it turned out to be wrong. Additionally, each one's role has changed over the years. They've all navigated church leadership transitions and many of the challenges and highs and lows that come with small group ministry. It was a great time with a big crowd of over 100 people in attendance and in a conversation that was not only enlightening, but fun as each person got to give their own perspective on their decades of experience. Let's listen in now.
But as they're making their way up, We have an all-star panel tonight of Miss Carolyn Taketa, the extraordinary attorney Carolyn Taketa, small groups coach, consultant extraordinaire, and we have the famous Dave Inns of North Coast.
Wow. You have your own fan club.
And before you get real excited, he paid most of those people. We have Steve Gladden, founder of the Small Group Network, and the event we're here. And he pays me, so I can't say anything bad about him. And then we have Rick Howerton here, all the way from Texas. Who did not pay anyone, and so these are the genuine fans. Yes. So as I'm going to hand this over, I would like to encourage this section to have a Muppet mentality. Now, do any of you all know Waldorf and Statler, the two old Muppets that just sit there and heckle everybody? This is the panel to heckle right here. This is.
Oh my gosh.
This is the one.
James.
I would not go for Carolyn. She will. She will get you back. But the other three are fair game. So I'm going to hand this over to you, and we'll get started. Oh, you got yours?
Yes. Am I on? Yes. All right. I love how James sets expectations. We know how important that is in small groups ministry. So let's withhold the heckling for a little bit. We're working on self-compassion and other compassion. So let's do that. It is my joy and honor to be up here with these guys. I know them personally for many years. Like Rick, I think we met at a lobby. And Dave, I know we did. We shared carrot cake, and then we were friends forever. That's how you bond, through carrot cake. And then Steve and I have known each other for 29 years. So it's a long, long haul. And so I can say, as a testimony, that they are amazing ministers of the gospel, but they're also incredibly humble, generous men that have served. They're like, what do they call it? The ride or die small groups people. And a lot of times people use small groups as a stepping stone onto something else, which is totally fine because people have different callings. But these guys have been in the trenches of small groups ministry for multiple 30 plus years each. And then I guess I'll add my 17 in that. So we have like 120, 140, I don't even know how old, but all of us together. This is a lot of experience up here and a lot of wisdom. And we only have 40 minutes, so we're going to, put on your seatbelt. We're going to go fast. I talk fast anyway. I'm sorry. I apologize in advance. We're going to go fast, but hopefully you'll catch some nuggets for your ministry, but also more for your leadership. If you want to do ministry in the long haul, these are models of how you survive and thrive. And meet God in the crucible of ministry. And I think these guys, both, all three of them, have demonstrated this over time in beautiful ways. And so I'm so honored to be here with them. And so with that, I'll read a little bit of their intro. And they have very different personalities. And we're not going to go read their whole intro. You can Google them. You can read all about their books, their models, their churches, blah, blah, blah. It's all fabulous. It's all fantastic. So just throw that out there. I say that with all love and sincerity.
Because the internet is so trustworthy.
Okay, but ChatGPT is, so feel free to throw it there. So throw it there. All right, so about each of them, you probably know them, but here's just a little snippet. Rick Howerton, to my left, he has spent 13 years as a small groups discipleship specialist at Lifeway Christian Resources, which is a publishing company, for 3 years with Nav Press as their small group expert, then 5 years at Kentucky Baptist Convention, church consultant for the South Central region of Kentucky, in the South. And then Rick presently serves as a central groups pastor for Lake Point Church in Rockwell, Texas, which is a church reaching nearly 30,000 on a weekly basis. He's been a church planter, a pastor, groups pastor, campus minister, teaching pastor, and church consultant. Whew, that's a lot.
I can't keep a job.
There have been a lot of transitions. God keeps giving you new assignments. He's also authored multiple books and studies, and the latest is going to be released this summer, called The Perpetually Growing Church, Best Practices of America's Most Influential Churches, which is going to be fabulous, and he'll be doing consulting and stuff around that. So that is Rick. Okay, Dave Enns, he brought his own fan club. Dave, way to go. Way to go. Dave has been the lead small groups pastor at North Coast Church. That's the sticky church, if you've heard of that term, since 2003. And he's helped this church grow from 700 to over 10,000 in weekly attendance, and they're now in 10 campuses. He's recently released his book, Circles Not Rows, The Power of Small Groups and Strategy That Works, which is a systemic guide to assist churches in establishing groundwork for small groups ministry. And you can look up that book as well. And that's like fresh off the press, right? Like this last year. That's so great. Okay, and then Steve did not give me a bio. So let me just say, Steve Layden, I Googled him. He has been the small groups pastor at Saddleback since 1998. That's it. No. No, he has.
I'll take it.
No. Oh, my gosh, his resume is a little too long. But just so you know, most of you know that he did start the Small Group Network about 16 years ago. I was privileged to be part of that from the ground floor up, and this has been a labor of love and service together. But he's also written Small Groups with Purpose, Leading Small Groups with Purpose, Planning Small Groups with Purpose. Any other purpose books coming your way? Some theme? That's been translating to 15 languages. And his heart for groups now beats just as strongly as it did many, many years ago. All right. So with that intro, and if you do want to learn more, they're going to stick around after, you know, the evening thing, so you can come. Make note of who you want to ask questions about, just because we won't have time for all of it, although I do appreciate some of the questions that did come in. All right. So what is one thing that you, if you could go back in a time machine and go back to your first less than 5 years in ministry? How many of you here have been in ministry less than 5 years? Okay. All right, less than 5 years in ministry. What do you wish you had done differently and why? And this is a question for all three of you. You want to start, Rick?
Sure. I would learn leadership. Mm-hmm. So what I found out in the first 5 years was I knew the group ministry space after doing some study and having lots of conversations. What I found out, what I realized about myself was I was knowledgeable in group life. I was good with mm-hmm. people. But I wasn't a proactive, confident leader. Mm-hmm. And without being proactive and being confident, you don't move forward with the agendas that God's given you. So I'd hire Bill Donahue
yes.
To help me out. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. So I said we need to keep the answer short, but that's a little too short.
I'm doing good.
I'm doing good.
One of the things, as I look back, thank you, Steve. Is health versus growth. And I would focus more on the idea of health. It's what does that look like? Because a growth one is always measuring knowledge and read your Bible. And so, and there's so much good, especially as started as a high school pastor with groups and all of that, but also beginning to move more into like, what is it health? Who knows you and the power of those relationships? Mm-hmm. So that would be the big thing. And that's kind of my thing right now. It's like, are you healthy? Because mm-hmm. I don't know how to measure growth exactly, but I think I can measure health a little more accurately.
I think for me, because as a first-generation Christian, I think if I could say anything, I wish I'd have done more was reach out to others. And I grew up in a generation where, unfortunately, that had to happen through letters to churches and had to happen through buying cassettes, which nobody knows about, and having to do other things, you know, that. But just take a more proactive way to make sure you have someone close to you that you can be that person that you can confess temptation to before you have to confess sin, and having the going after the person, not to be, will you mentor me, but could I have coffee with you? And then you will get the mentors that you be. So being much more aggressive going after someone to be hand in hand with you, because most people are more, I have found, to say yes all the time.
Especially in small group space. And this is a great place to find the people like that, your mentors, your person who's just a little ahead of you, which is partly what this has been designed for. Great. What is something that you thought you knew about ministry? And this could be in later in your ministry career. And reality knocked you upside the head and you realized you did not know. Steve?
I'll take first cut at it. I think it's a very practical one. I think honoring the Sabbath. Mm. And I think one of the things that I discovered is it's not just about doing, it's about being. And if you know me, I'm full on doer, the Mary Martha thing, cut it out of my Bible a long time ago. So cleaned it up. But just honoring the, I can honor a lot of the tactical things, tithing, no issue, other things, no issue, Bible reading, no issue, stuff like that. But they come very checkboxy. But the heart piece of a Sabbath would be one I would really want to encourage people to dive into.
Mine would be when it comes to recruiting leaders and people involved in ministry. That's why I got involved, to get more people involved. So I'm asking them to get involved, and then they would tell me no, and I'm disappointed, and I'd be done with them. And which is normal, right? We're disappointed, and then we move on. And I suddenly realized that I was using them. I was getting them to fit the box that I wanted, because I was done with the conversation, and I think it was the Holy Spirit flowing in or whatever, but all of a sudden I said, hey, well, can you pray for me as I'm continuing to look for new options? Because we recruit through referral, so somebody's already said they've got good input, and all of a sudden I latched onto that, and I asked them why, and I realized I suddenly was beginning to build a relationship, and that I'm like, I should never stop calling them. And I said, hey, can I call you in a year? And then I would check in with what's going on. And they would say, yeah. And I actually would say, can you think for a couple days and see if you come up with any options for me? I'll give you a call back. And I found, and our team has found, all of a sudden we're calling these people back and we're asking them, hey, how did your year go? Not starting with the recruit thing. And we have these relationships that are happening, and they're starting to give us options. They're involved in ministry, not that I thought, but far beyond it, and blessing me and praying for me. And that's been amazing thing, because it softens the no, because they're never easy. But suddenly it's like, wait, I really genuinely care about what they want to do, not just what I need them to do.
That's great.
Wow. That's an easy one for me. It would be, what is discipleship? What does it mean to make disciples? My first part of my journey was, if I could just get more people in groups, let them be in community, let them love each other, let them care for each other. Then as I started understanding Jesus' practice of making disciples, the realization was, if we let them lay in comfort, they never grow spiritually. Mm-hmm. In fact, my statement often is, spiritual growth begins with discomfort. The Bible calls you out to do something beyond yourself. You have to act in faith to move forward. It's uncomfortable, and you grow. So I think so often in my ministry, it was, I'm held accountable for the numbers, but God holds me accountable for disciple making. Mm-hmm. And at the point I realized that I had to guide my leaders to call people to acts of obedience that were beyond their comfort zone, it was at that point we were going to make mature disciples. And Steve once said to me in a conversation, and it really started me in this journey. He said, Jesus said, come follow me, and it was 3 years before he said, come die for me. So he was raising the bar. If you look at Scripture, raising the bar, raising the bar, raising the bar, raising the bar. Now come die for me. So I think my thing would definitely be, we have to help our leaders raise the bar, raise the bar, raise the bar, raise the bar, because it may be that someday they have to die for him.
So a follow-up question to that, and this was actually related to a question that came in from one of you. So how do you inspire and encourage people who like comfort? You know, we like comfort. How do you inspire them? If you want the leaders to raise the bar, how do you stir that up in the leader?
Can we start there?
Sure.
Okay, yeah. So Craig Rochelle once said, people do what you lead them to do. Mm. So we have to decide, first of all, if we're going to lead them to that place. We inspire people through story. So all of us who have read books of martyrs and read stories of martyrs, we're inspired by those stories. But when it comes to making sacrifice for the kingdom, Jesus reminded us again and again and again and again, must give up your house if necessary. He had no place to lay his head. Must be willing to give up family, father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life. Jesus warned us and prepared us for it. We have to help them realize sacrifices are not a secondary possibility. For those who are living the Christian life, in our culture, they will be perceived as religious fanatics. And yet God may call us to be that bold in our faith. So we have to raise the bar, help them understand the possibilities, as Jesus did warn them about what might happen, but remind them of the blessing that comes at the point you're with Christ and he gives you the rewards that are offered you.
Because that would be with the, yeah.
Yeah, to piggyback on that too, is I think we underestimate how much time it takes. Mm-hmm. And we teach an idiom that in order to speak truth into somebody's life, it's got to be built on a platform of trust. And the only way they can trust you is by spending time with them. And although, and when you're talking about moving people along a discipleship pathway or, you know, helping them grow closer to Christ, it causes us, we have to speak truth into their lives. And if you haven't spent the time with them, they won't trust you. And so part of it is going in that spending time with people. Sometimes they need comfort. Sometimes they need prodding. Yeah. Sometimes they need different parts of the shepherding tools that are there. Sometimes you got to have the poop scooper so you can clean up after them, you know. And there's many different parts of what you've got to do as a shepherd. But it all starts by spending time with people. And as you know, any of you that have kids, you don't disciple them, you know, in a quick shot. It's always seizing the moments that you're in that time moment with them in a time that you can just help take them closer.
My answer is a little bit different in that we avoid the word pathway in discipleship. We would look at it going, people grow on a need to grow basis. In other words, it's not because of a class or a situation, but it is in relationship that you're caused to grow. And what Steve is saying is we're very tied into that. We need to build a friendship with people. So our life groups are not focused on Bible study, though there's Bible study. They're focused on building that relationship. And if they are hearing from everybody and involved, there's going to be conflict. So we assume conflict is automatically happening in every group. And so the bar is getting raised at those different times. And so that's what we're evaluating of, like, are our groups staying together? We know they're having conflict. Now, here was the interesting thing is that we started offering even community service stuff. And when we put it together in such a way that was doable, it's incredible how involved they are in ministry. It's incredible what's going on. There goes my phone again. Over, you know, 4 service projects a day throughout the year through our groups, using nonprofits in the community. So and I know I'm not like talking about a spiritual knowledge track, but an action track. And once we've done that, we have just seen this just sense of continuing to bring people more into community, opening up groups, recruiting leaders, and again, seeing those lives change, new leadership stepping up. So,
yeah, which is the stories that we're talking about, right? So then there's the modeling piece. If you're not doing it, can't call people to what you don't have, which is, you know, we heard again last night, and then kind of the long process. I think for me, when I got into ministry, I really thought it would be faster. I really thought, why don't people want to grow? And so I think just that word of patience, it takes longer. If you're newer in ministry, just know it takes a long time for people to change, and you got to stay in the game with them for a long time. I think that's a really good word. All right, so now let's switch gears a little bit, talk about organizational leadership. Most people in this room are not lead pastors, so we don't sit in the first chair. We sit in the second, third, fourth, depending how big you are, 50th, I don't know. Some of these churches are huge. So in whatever chair you're sitting in, so the challenge is to lead up well, lead across well, like your team, and then lead your volunteers and lead people that are dependent upon you well. So let's start with the toughie, which is the lead up well, and the one that is tied to your professional development. So in leading up well, what is you can either answer with what is a good tip, pro, or you can answer with what is a pitfall to avoid. And thank you to the person who gave me that word, pitfall. I thought that was really lovely. So if you have a pitfall that perhaps you've fallen into, please share and let us know so we won't fall into that. So leading up, tips. Go for it.
Would you define leading up for me just really quickly?
Leading your lead pastor, your executive pastor, whoever is your supervisor, the decision maker.
Yes, okay. For me, Steve actually gave me this information. I'm going to steal your answer, I'll bet.
You can't wait to hear it.
So Steve once told me when we were having a conversation about this, he said, you need to learn your pastor's love language.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And speak to them with that language. Because at that point, you've connected at a heart level. He didn't say this, but you've connected at a heart level. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you're going to gain a hearing because they realize you're caring for their heart more than you're caring for your own heart.
Yeah. I agree totally. Again, different leads. Larry was leading. Now Chris is leading. Different supervisors. And they all have a different way they want us to communicate to them. Some want to process more. Some do not. And then here's another one is... we kind of say, like, there's three, if you do these three things, life will go well for you at North Coast. Be honest, show respect, and no surprises. If you do those three things, life is going to go well for you. Because if something's going down in my ministry, I want them to know about it before they hear about it from someone else. And that's happened. And all of a sudden, dang it, I didn't do that. And I got nailed on the other side. It's like, wait, why didn't you know? I couldn't stand up for you. I didn't know. Now they try to always, but that really helps that. So that's been one of our things.
Yeah, I think a lot of it happens with relationship too. And it just depends where you're at. You know, I've gone through a season when I first came on staff at Saddleback in 98, you learn what, like Rick talked about, I learned what Rick's love language was. But I think as I got to know him more and stuff like that, it was learning when was the appropriate time that he wanted to hear stuff. And sometimes when I'm in an anxious place, I want to go to a speedy place in the most opportune time. And sometimes my timing is not his timing. So learning how to pace that out, it was an important piece for me with that. And it's probably my number one pitfall is this. I'm wanting to get it done. I'm wanting to execute off of it. I know it's something that needs to happen. And then I think the thing I've learned more in life is just that there's a timing to everything we want to see happen. Mm-hmm. And as Andy is onboarding at Saddleback, there's things I wish were happening right now that I want right now and that I want him to communicate like what Rick used to communicate, but... You know, Rick had 42 years in the chair right there, and Andy's got 16 months right now. And so giving grace in those moments and helping whoever your senior leader is, helping them see you as a friend, not as a foe. Mm-hmm. Helping them see that you're trying to help accomplish what God has put on their plate. Because first and foremost, I'm called to minister to is Jason in the room? You are back there, so I have to talk real nice. But I'm first and foremost called to work with Jason and for Jason and help his agenda move further with his whole scope in ministries per se. And then when God opens up other things, is trying to serve, you know, where the groups areas are and seeing those things. So coming around and having I would say the best coaching I'd say is have the whole church mindset instead of your mindset, and life will catch up.
Can I share a pitfall?
Sure.
A pitfall I see in consulting churches is when, if you're not being successful, your leader's not going to give you more trust and more opportunity.
Right.
pitfall I see often when I have been consulting a church is the staff member says, I'm killing it. I mean, with the pastors I'm walking through, and they get to them and they go, they suck. I mean, they're horrible. They're horrible.
Little mismatch.
The problem was one person. As a matter of fact, so the problem was one person thought this is what success was, and the other person thought this is what success was. Yes. There is nothing wrong with going to your supervisor and saying, what is success? And then you'll know you're hitting the target that needs to be aimed at.
Yeah, I think actually that's such a great point. And I think along with that, it helps if you help your supervisor know you. So I needed information or I get anxious. So I would tell my executive pastor, I'll be with you. I'm a great follower if I know we're going. I just need a heads up before you make a big announcement because I need time to like process it. So if you give me that, then I will be like, have your back. I will, you know, cast that out, talk about that everywhere and be your person out front. But I can't do that. And so I'm like, I just need that just a few minutes first. And that just to equip them. They don't know you. They don't know what is going to be a emotional landmine for you, what may trigger you. So it's good to just, we need to know them, but also help them to know us.
Let me add just a couple things, too, is sometimes you're going, I don't know how to do that with your lead. Get somebody that can help you. Well, wait, that's gossip. No, it's not. Gossip is when it's not helping the situation. You want someone to help you. You want them to win. So that's one of those things. And then a couple few years ago, what, 4 or 5 years ago, I hired Philip Byers over there. And so he came in on our
team. After a lobby.
And so, yeah, this guy here in the middle. He's way bigger than me, so he's frightening. But anyway, so my conversation with Philip was, hey, buddy, so excited to have him on the team. We're both very strong leaders. And we said, we are going to step on each other's toes and we're going to tick each other off. And we have to be committed to working that out to survive. And that's exactly what's happened.
Which is a great segue to how do you lead across? Because over time, Philip has more responsibility, and you know, there's times where we have a whole team, and now you have to move as a block together.
Exactly.
So, any pitfalls or tips on that?
Well, yeah, we get ticked at each other, and all of a sudden, we need to get space from each other. But then it's like, wait, I need, you know, he's come into my office, steamed up, sit down, upset with me, and I'm like, what the heck, and vice versa. But it's exactly what I say. and so we're committed. We remind each other, hey, this is what we're committed to do. I'm here for your best. And sometimes that can't happen in that conversation. It needs to happen the next day in that. But we are reminding each other because we are watching others that we are like, wait, we don't want to go that direction. We want to go this direction. And it takes work and it's not easy. Leadership is not easy. It's not the hardest thing. We're not doing the hardest thing anybody's done, but leadership, but anything worth much, cost much. And so, anyway.
So, Steve, you've led so many teams over all the different, there's a lot of transitions that sound like almost always. So you've led all these teams on and off and across. So any tips on leading across?
Yeah, I think one of them is.
Or leading down, either
one. Is one is short accounts is really good principle to get in there. Just, if you've got a problem, you know, being able to go to that person and just being able to talk to them and just working through kind of like what Dave and Philip were talking about and with all of those pieces. And I think another great piece is just, you know, learning who they are.
Yeah.
And who's their family? Where are they at? Who are their kids? You know, where's all those pieces of who they are, what do they bring? Because a lot of times when you know, like people who know me, they know I've got more complexities in my family than I wish I had. But when they know those components of me, there's more grace given in that aspect. And so when you know who they are as a person, and this also goes with your senior leader, this just goes up,
across
and down. But the more you can know what makes them tick, you know, besides personalities, and that's important, but, you know, their marriage, if they're married to a spouse, their kids, their dynamics, and all those pieces, the more you can know what we call like their soft data, the personal data of who they are, the more you can move across very quickly because it is proximity builds empathy. And so the closer you are to those that you're working with, the the more empathy you have when they may step on your toes in different situations.
And also to let yourself be known. Yeah. You know, invite them over into your life. They might want to hang out with you and your kids. I know, it's shocking, but sometimes like they want that. So let them see you in all the messiness and all the things. I think that also builds trust and vulnerability. All right, so Rick, let's turn to you on this one. So you've been in numerous churches. I mean, I read that whole long list. Numerous roles in your denomination. You've been a consultant. So you've observed a lot of churches, and you've been in multiple different churches, different states, all the things, right? Okay, so what is a piece of advice you have that you'd offer about how do you navigate through transition? Sometimes you chose a transition. Sometimes you did not choose the transition, and we know how that rolls, and that's painful. So what are some guidance you can give in those times?
First, thank you for letting everyone know I've been fired. Thank you for that.
You know, it happens to everyone. It happens to everyone to some extent. You're right. Oh, my gosh. So you find out stuff. There's a club.
So I actually made a short list on this one. So if you'll forgive me, I'm going to read from a list, but just to save time. But first, let me say a transition. We have to remember that we're not the only ones making the transition. We have spouses and children that are making a transition. And it's going to be harder for them, as my wife always reminds me, than it is us, because we're walking into our church building and have relationships.
Yeah.
So we want to be sure that we're shoring them up first, I think, is the thing that I would say. When it comes to the transition into the church, my experience has been I have to remember that the first thing I have to do is walk in knowing I have no reputation at all. Mm-hmm. So I can either shore up a strong reputation, or I can make decisions and do actions that hurt my reputation. So I made a quick list. I'll just run through it real quick. Listen more than you talk. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we think we've been hired to be the new big winner. And nobody else on staff may realize that, just the person that hired you. So honor present leadership. I'm 66 years old. My supervisor's in this room, who I love dearly and is a great guy. We're friends. I oftentimes, it's yes, sir, no, sir. And with the ladies on our team who were in leadership or even my peers, it's yes, ma'am, no, ma'am.
It's because you're Southern.
Maybe so.
Yeah, it's so polite. It's so polite.
But I want them to realize that I am honoring them. Whether or not that is the language that's normally used, I want them to realize they deserve honor. The big one for me that I've learned over the years is to honor past leadership. So the person that has gone before me, so one of the leading Sunday school guys in the country was Carter Shotwell, who was at the church prior in the role that I'm in. And I often say to people, I can't fill his shoes, but I'm going to try to walk in his footsteps.
Ooh. And that's a nice line.
Let's just understand that I realize he is the one that took 40 years to establish this ministry. Mm. It wasn't me. So that has been helpful.
We say that one line again. That was so.
Yes, I can't fill his shoes, but I'm going to try to walk in his footsteps.
You know, it all belongs to the Lord anyway. You know, who cares about copyright?
Work hard. Just be a hard worker.
Seems so basic, but yes.
It's actually basic, but you'll be amazed at how many churches I've consulted. And the pastor said, this person came, and we thought they were going to kill it, but they just don't work hard. And those first months, maybe even that first year, you need to dive deeply into that position without sacrificing family.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
And then just one last thing. I think this is just kind of encapsulates the whole thing. Be more wise than you are smart.
Mm.
And what I mean by that is oftentimes I'm going to walk in and tell you all the books I've read and all the knowledge I've gotten, et cetera, et cetera. Be much wiser just to say, I don't know it all. Mm. I'm learning with you.
Isn't he amazing? He's so amazing. You are. Yes. Okay. You can sit down. all right, so, and it wasn't that he got fired, by the way. There was a structural reorganization. I feel bad. At the time, why would anyone ever not ask Rick? I know. It's true, though. Okay.
But,
that's so true. Okay, so as you guys, we all learned a lesson. It's just let it go. It is. I've just fallen in my own pitfall. I just want to model that for you all. This is what not to do. All right, so Dave, we know this is, you know, also on the statistics for pastor burnout since COVID is at a record high, and I think the average pastor is at a church for about 3 years. You three are outliers, have been doing this work for so long in, you know, and for you in the same church that you attended, like, even longer than we were on staff. So what is the secret to staying the course and not just surviving, but really thriving? Because that's what I've seen you do.
I've been there 34 years, April 1, so that gives you some context. But it was I want to be really clear. It's the church that fit me to be there that long. Does that make sense? Because there's some churches there that you're like, you're there, you need to go. It's just not working. It's not the right fit for you. Now, if you're just always popping around and going, you're not working through stuff. You need to do that. So, but North Coast continue. I couldn't be a small groups person for 20 years in a church, I don't think, that was growing, because I need new. Now, you're like, because leading small groups is kind of the same thing over and over again. But because we continued to grow, starting at 700 way back and now at that big number on the other side now, I had to continue to remake my leadership style. So that was one of the keys that worked for me. Now, if that wouldn't have gone on, would I still be at North Coast? I don't know. I just don't know. And so that's that piece there. So real quick, though, like, what has kept me the long haul or keeps me fresh? Thriving, because you're thriving and you've moved around. And so rhythm is one. It's like some seasons are insane. You're not in, and that's just how it goes. You just can't live there. I think we, most of us, understand that. It's just that every year or every season can't be the season that you're going as hard as you can. So it's not like perfect balance. The next one is get help. Be willing to get help. Our world now, even ministry, is more open to us dealing with stuff that's difficult. I mean, our topics have already been there. It's like, I'm having a hard time. And we all are having a hard time at times, right? Can we just call that? And it's like, that is part of it. And I think there's two or three times where it was major stuff where my wife and I, in regards to ministry, we're like, we don't know if this is working. And I'm at a great church. We don't know if this is working. I have lots of questions about it. We got to get help. So we kind of working through purpose, working through life, getting other input into our lives is super, super important. And then two last things is, I sat with my wife almost every weekend for at least during the sermon. Now, everybody can't do that, but I have multiple services. I'm in all the services, but one service I tried to always sit with my wife. And now, a lot of times I have to get up and leave because stuff, right? But that became, it was just, we didn't talk. I mean, we're listening for the most part. But that was just something we were doing together, and we were in a life group together. And so that's just what we have done throughout our whole time. We're doing that life together. And then the other one, because my marriage and my kids are way more important than my ministry out there. And so the other one is, my kids all know this saying is, never let school get in the way of your education. They all know that, because dad wasn't always available on weekends. So all of a sudden dad would pull them out of school on Friday, and I don't care what they have going on. I don't care what their grade is. We're going to go do something. And they all know that. And so that was just an important part. And as we kind of, you know, they're all out, and that's been a thing that they've said they've been so thankful for, because dad was available, not available the same times all the time, but available in ways that was unique to them and met their needs.
Yeah, I think you started to answer this a bit about the tough seasons. And I know in a room this size, there are people in this season and wondering, is ministry worth it? Should I leave? And we did get a question from one of you about when you've experienced seasons where you felt like leaving, what made you decide to stay and how did you respond? And you had some responses to that. I didn't know if Steve, if you or Rick wanted to add to that. If you've ever had a season, ever a perfect place called Saddleback where you wanted to potentially leave, you know, if you've ever been walking through that kind of season.
Well, first off, thanks for those of you that interviewed me. I think part of that is it sounds like such a trite statement, but to know your calling. And that requires, there's sometimes, because prior to Saddleback, you know, I was on some different church staffs, different seasons, shorter seasons, And sometimes God is loosening your roots and moving you on. But sometimes your calling is at that place. And I think that is helped me because there's different backgrounds. A lot of times you're praying for different things. One of the things when I came on staff and at Saddleback and we started to have kids, I prayed and I said, God, if we could be at a church where my kids don't have to move, maybe that's something that happens. Maybe it doesn't happen. But if that could be a prayer, then I would love to see that happen. And then there are the opportunities where God's like going, really? Okay, how much do you want to pray that prayer? And all of a sudden, when tough times come. But so there's art and there's science. And so much time we try to think, you know, is this job perfect for me? Is this, do I make more money at the next church? Do I get more stuff at the next church? Do I have a cozier lifestyle at the next thing? And it becomes all about the science. You know, what do I get when I go to that church? Versus the art of being able to say, does God want me there? Does God want me to work through something? And so I would say I'm comfortable enough to know in my calling that when times are hard, I if God has not released me, I don't want to mess up something good. And what I've experienced at Saddleback, the times that I have wanted to leave with such a passion, because and there's been luring things out there. You churches in the South, how you pay what you pay, I don't get it. You know, it's either drugs, tobacco, I'm not sure what. Moonshine, I don't know. Yeah.
Where's the moonshine?
Our problem was is we legalized everything, and so, you know, we can't do anything. But.
Okay, let's rein it in. Let's
rein it in. Carolyn coached me so bad, she goes, please don't go off the subject. So, anyways, but with that is being able to say in those hardest of hard times, I was comfortable knowing that when it was all said and done and I look back at each season, God was saving me from myself when I would go obey him. And that's where I would say in the moment, it didn't feel good. It didn't make sense. But a few years down the road and I look back, God was really giving me the desires of my heart and saving me from the stupidity I probably would have done. So, and I don't want to minimize some people who are transitioning, need to transition, but I would just dig really deep into your calling of saying, I believe that God moves us around, and if he's got you there, don't try and help God out.
That's great. And hopefully you have somebody, a wise mentor, that can help you walk through that. Because I know there was two times where I called Steve and I said, I think I'm done. I can't take this. And his question was, do you feel released? I'm like, who are you, my Holy Spirit? No. What is happening? I was looking for empathy from my big mentor. Instead, I got the Holy Spirit, you know, smack down. So I had to reconsider, okay, what is this whole release thing? Because in the corporate world, you just go when you want to go. And actually, he was absolutely right. I mean, after praying through it, and then I would have missed out on another, you know, 5-10 years of God blessing me through it and shaping me. Well, yeah. Hopefully, yes. There was a great question that came in from our Canadian friend, I believe. Yes. And this is for you, Rick. You don't know this question because you didn't see this online. It says, how do you equip leaders to encourage their group members to go into deeper places of spiritual formation, more contemplative practices, inner healing, etc., beyond the tangible markers of discipleship and community, such as giving, serving, small groups, etc.? And then I guess I could read this because this is on our public thing. It says, Canadians can be pretty private and non-intrusive about such things. I don't think it's just Canadians. I think it's people in general across the board. But for spiritual formation, how do you encourage them?
So this is vulnerability as well as asking people to do something that they, disciplines that they need to be involved in.
Yes, but beyond the obvious ones like Bible reading and, you know, fasting, prayer, whatever. How do you go deeper?
Yeah, I think we look at Jesus as the model. And he was the model. Yes. So if we don't model it and tell the story of our own journey in it, most people aren't even going to consider it.
That's true.
So it starts with us, honestly. Our being willing, first of all, to do those things and sincerely be able to say we're engaged in them. And sometimes to say, I had to set aside, if we're talking about the disciplines, I had to set aside on my calendar the time to do that. So,
like the Sabbath.
My wife is a godly woman to the point sometimes I wish she would sometimes not remind me that I'm not a godly
man.
Should
I text that to her right now? Should I let her know?
So Julie is in the Word probably 2 hours a day, praying for people, aww, engaging with people. She disciples women, young women. That's her thing. And I hear their conversations often from upstairs as she's meeting with a group of people. And I say, you would not want to be, people say, would your wife disciple me? I say, you don't want to be discipled by Julie.
Why not?
Because when you come in and you just want to sit down during the meeting and just talk about all the problems you have and your husband isn't nice enough to you, she's going to say, are you going to God? Are you in the Word? Are you walking with the Lord? Because if you're not, you're going to have a perverted view of everything around you because the enemy can win at those, in those moments. So first of all, you have to be willing to be held accountable. Yeah. And that has to be established before you start holding someone accountable. You can't hold someone accountable if they haven't given you permission to hold them accountable. So that's vital. But then you have to be the model for them. And if you are the model for them, what can't be taught will be caught. And so I just think that would be my perspective, giving you a very quick answer off the top of my head, that those things are necessity.
Yes, especially sometimes vulnerability. We always tell leaders when we train them, right, you have to go first. Your group is only going to be as vulnerable as you're willing to be. So you then have to model it for your group leaders. So it kind of continues down the pike. All right, so we have a few minutes left. So I have just last round here. So, Steve, I've gotten a bunch of questions yesterday and today about how long has small group network been around. Like, I guess, James, we don't do a great job telling our history. So, Steve, give us a recap of kind of the heart with which you started it. We started with 20 people, and here we are, and this is a beautiful thing. So tell us why this still matters so much, even more now than ever.
Yeah, I mean, part of how it came about, and this is where we're better together, and each one of us showing up, and how every one of our churches have a specialty of some sort, and each one of us have a specialty of some sort. And the beauty is being able to share with each other and come around with each other in the good times and the bad times. How the network started was, God was laying on my heart in 06 to use the platform of Saddleback to be able to convene people. Now, the beautiful thing is, since 06, God has, blessed a lot of great churches that we're networking with, that we're utilizing all kinds of different platforms that other churches have too. But the big thing is that we want to come along the Big C Church. But how God, and I don't know if you've ever done this, I'd always say, I don't have the time to do something outside my day job. I don't have the ability to do something out of my day job. And God, I think someone else would be better qualified for it than me to do this. And God gave me a situation where one guy named John Grant called on an afternoon of one day, and another guy named Eddie Mosley called on the next day. And they both were asking similar questions. And I said, hey, Eddie, do you know this guy? And he goes, no, where's he at? And he goes, he's about 10 minutes from you. And so it led to trying to network together. And sometimes what we've learned is that sometimes we're great relationally inside of our church, but we don't network outside of our church. And the only way we're going to break down barriers between the churches is being able to get relationally connected with each other and show each other that we're on the same team. If you've gone on a missions trip at all, if your gun is pointed towards the enemy, we're all on the same team, and our doctrine doesn't matter much. But, sometimes when we're in the United States or Canada, all of a sudden, we're back into our little fiefdoms. And one of the things that we want to do is we don't want something that's built on Saddleback. We don't want something that's built on your church. We want something that's built together that we can network with, because we want to resource strategically everybody. And we want to help people connect personally. But we want to also say, if we're not in this globally, then we're going to miss the whole calling of what Jesus said. And so part of what I want to encourage you is not to be a spectator out there and just come to an event or, you know, see different things. Right now, we're more in the digital world than we've ever been. But a lot of what the network does, it's because of you. The questions that you see that we're discussing, they were Carolyn. Just me texting her across the room saying,
last night.
Hey, can you think of some questions? Our whole vision statement to connect personally, to resource strategically, impact globally, came from Philip's brain and his exercising and doing strategic planning. You know, those are just some small examples, but there are churches in your area, because all of us get calls from other churches that they need the community that we can offer. And one of the things is, we're not trying to make money, but we are trying to be smart with God's resources. And a lot of you have, you have great minds about different things in community and leadership and discipleship and spiritual formation. And if you would just look into a camera and help capture some of that, we can bless other churches. And so we just want to come around and let's be the Big C church. And I'll tell you, I don't have time to do all of this. And I know you have day jobs that don't have time. But what I do know is that when you tithe your time to the Big C church, God makes up for it. And so it's pretty brief, but I would want to encourage you, if you'll give, it's like when you give blood. If you'll give, God will replenish it. And I'm not going to try and take blood, but I am ready to take an offering.
Some analogies always kind of falter. All right, so we're going to wrap this up, this final question. We would love to partner with you. So if you have skills and talents, you're like, I don't know what I have to offer. See James. See Steve. Let us know.
See James.
Yes, and James has really done an incredible job making us much more digital, much more savvy. And so if you're like, I don't know if I have anything to offer, but I'd like to be involved in some way, I have this much time or whatever, there's so many ways to be involved, and that's how you become part of the network beyond yourself. And really, your church is going to be blessed as a result of you blessing the Big C Church. And you're going to, the cross-pollination has been super helpful. So
I just encourage you to look at the website, go to smallgroupnetwork.com, and just peruse through it. Look through the different...
Is it updated, James? Should they push through it?
Yes, they should, because it will be. But I want to encourage you, look through that. See what the Holy Spirit stimulates in your mind, because I've talked to so many of you, and doggone it, you have such great wisdom. Mm-hmm. And I hate to see it just in this geographical area, but just expanded.
Yeah. All right, so final. Question, and this came from one of you as well. So this goes back to you and modeling. So we are all small group practitioners. However, you have to live out what you preach. So tell us what you most enjoy about your group of community that you have that is holding you accountable. And I know you all have them. And what your small group experience, what you enjoy most about them. You personally, not your ministry, you personally. Go ahead, yes. That's what you get for being to my left.
So I'll be very vulnerable with you. I struggle, honestly, with insecurity. Mm-hmm. Have my entire life. It comes from being a Baptist pastor's kid and watching pastors get beat up. Mm-hmm. And so my group of guys just often remind me, you're a good person.
Aww.
God is using you. Keep going.
Which is absolutely true. Well, thank you for sharing that. You have the gift of encouragement, Steve. Nice.
So I'm a word of affirmation guy, like you, and I need people to say, you're doing a good job. Yeah. I believe in you. And I have to remind people to do that at times, and that drives me crazy because I feel selfish. But I know, and I'm a verbal processor, so I need that. Mm-hmm. And then, so that's some of those closest, and then the life group. We have all ages and stages of faith in there and non-believers, and the Holy Spirit speaks through every one of them to me. I try to take the leadership hat off and let them minister, and I remind them over and over again, God's speaking through you. And it's rich, and when you're not there, you don't get it. And that's what we would say the number one discipleship thing, sorry, personal, but big deal, is their best discipleship decision is getting a life group, because you access, you do all the things you wish you would do, but you don't. And it's not about how disciplined you are. It's tell me about your relationships. Tell me about who the people are in your life. And it's great to laugh and cry with the right people. Amen? That is what community's about.
And let's underscore what he said. You have to be able to take your leader hat off, your pastor hat off, your staff hat off. And if your small group is not one where you can do that, or they allow you to do that, after you keep asking them, I just want to be level, just be real, just be Dave, like then it's not going to be super helpful for you. So that leadership hat off thing is a great tip.
I remember when I came on staff, our group has been together a very, very long time. And those that have remained in Southern California and haven't moved to Texas or Nashville or other places, it's funny because we were doing a marriage study, and I'll never forget when our group first started. I was Pastor Steve in our group, and then when my wife shared about our marriage, it was like, "Oh, you're not a pastor."
Lisa's the best.
And it ended.
So sometimes the hat's taken off for you.
Yeah, that is truth. But I think the best way I could describe it for me is like when I'm here. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how much I missed this community mm-hmm. until I missed it last year. Mm-hmm. And I was by myself. Mm-hmm. But when I'm with our group, there's moments where the Holy Spirit moves, and there's studies, and there's all kinds of things. But it's just the little nuggets through the day. I mean, when we started our group, I think most of us had one kid or we were pregnant. And now that our kids are all in their upper 20s and 30s, they grew up knowing us as auntie and uncle. Mm-hmm. And just to have them go by, you know, three of them are on staff now. And then to go by and say, "Hey, Uncle Steve," and I just like, it is the endearing piece of being able to say, "This is why community is so important. This is why it's the day in and day out." And do we meet exactly every week, 52 weeks out of the year? No, because life happens and crap rolls up on our doorstep and stuff like that. But are we there for each other? And are we going through the life moments? And for me, with every trial we've had with our son, our group has always been there mm-hmm. and has ministered to us in ways that just nobody could. And so it is one of those things. I feel so sorry for the people that may be on our staff or in our church that don't have that, when it's mm-hmm. not hard to do. It's actually very fun to do. And so it's the pieces with that, and I can't remember if I answered your question.
You did answer my question. It's the integrity of, if you're going to stand up and talk about groups for your church, the integrity of being able to speak about your own experience is going to go far. And that's kind of what you've heard from all of you. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, and you guys kept it brief, and we are on time, so we can move on to the AI conversation. So let's give everybody a hand.
That's it for this month's episode of SG Squared, Steve Glidden on Small Groups. This episode, again, was recorded at the Lobby Gathering, a small group gathering event in San Juan Capistrano, Southern California, each February of every year. So be sure to check out more details about that at smallgroupnetwork.com/events. And we'll be sure to see you next month right here on SG Squared, Steve Glidden on Small Groups.